A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
And Saturday morning is officially underway.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
Now this week we had a big week at my house.
Okay.
My youngest daughter had her 10th birthday.
Ooh, double digits.
Her 10th birthday. Hannah is now 10. And when she was born, I mean, she was born 3 months early.
Yes.
So we spent 90 days in the hospital with her. Long haul. Other people have done it. But for me, that was the first time we did anything like that.
Right.
Completely. Just we didn't know what to expect. A lot of scary stuff happened.
Yes.
And the doctors told us Hannah is going to be developmentally delayed. Just get ready for that. She's going to be delayed. She's not going to be able to keep up with everybody. You know Hannah.
I know Hannah.
That kid is smarter than all of my family put together.
Yep.
You know what she got for her birthday this year?
What?
She got a gift card to get coffee and a gift card to get her nails done.
That girl does love her coffee.
It's insane. For Christmas, she got a laptop so she could make spreadsheets.
Yes, because she wants to be a teacher.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. So it was a big week. It was fun to celebrate Hannah's birthday. And Hannah loves listening to the show.
Yes,
so I thought
does.
I'd do one last little thing here and just say happy birthday, Hannah.
Aw, happy nice? Birthday, Han.
Yeah, now let's talk about the show.
Okay, now let's talk
Move
about
on. The Put Hannah back on the shelf for a year.
Yeah, we'll talk about you again next year, Hannah. Anyway, people are always concerned when they're choosing colors for their home that the end result is going to be a little bit like, well, a Jackson Pollock painting, kind of a patchwork of colors and styles instead of that smooth transitioning color continuity that they're really striving
for. Everybody
wants. Right. Well, we've got some simple tips today that are going to help you create an absolute masterpiece. And we'll tell you about a really cool paint color magic trick.
Also, we're going to be in the studio with Steve Rosema from Northgate Appliances, and we're going to talk about what everybody needs to know when they're updating kitchen appliances.
Yes, and get your paper and pens ready because
it's going to be good.
Well, yeah, we did a preliminary chat with him, and holy smokes. Yeah, it's absolutely a noteworthy segment.
Right, but before we get to all of that, we want to talk about a question that we got from a real live listener.
Yay!
And we absolutely love getting questions.
Yes. So if you have one, send it.
Send it. Radio@repcolite.com.
Exactly.
Couldn't be easier for an email address.
Or you can post it to us on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's
put it right on our page and we'll get to it and we'll answer it.
Exactly.
And if we answer it on the air, we'll give you free paint to boot.
Yes.
Anyway, the question. Here it is. We recently painted our bathroom and almost immediately we noticed that when we take a shower, the walls start sweating some kind of tan sticky residue.
Gross.
Which really does sound terrible. Before we painted, we had stripped wallpaper. Is there maybe some leftover glue on the walls, and is the moisture in the air reacting to it, causing these problems? More importantly, how do we fix it?
This is a really good question.
It is a great question. It's something that we run into a fair amount, and people are always very confused about it.
Exactly. We have... Okay, let's just throw this out there that we get this question quite a bit and we know the answer, but we wondered if you were scouring the internet to
What would you find on the internet?
Right, because we're always concerned what our customers may find if they try to answer it on their own.
And with good reason.
Yeah, so of course the wallpaper paste came up a few times. Smoke residue from a wood stove or a heavy smoker, because heavy smoking residue does kind of look like that. It's a little bit different, but similar.
Could be that. That's what the internet suggests.
Right, and Dan, Dan's favorite was blood.
It could be blood from a murder.
I'm pretty sure you would know if that's what
the suggestion was. Maybe get a CSI team down there.
Yeah.
Or maybe just call a Benjamin Moore dealer near you or Repcolite if you're out here.
Yeah.
And we can help you. Another one that I really liked was secretions from bugs. Just because you don't run across the word secretions all the time.
Right.
And especially in the paint world.
Well,
it's really fun to run into the word
secretion. And I would just like to point out, if you have that much stuff going on that's secretions from bugs, you have a bigger problem than whatever that sticky residue is.
Yeah, let's fix the bug problem first.
Right.
Anyway, there's all these crazy things out there on the internet, and that's what you're going to run into if you start Googling this.
Yes.
So let's get to the answer. It's likely none of those things.
Exactly.
Most likely it's not the murder scene. You know, that's probably pretty rare that's going to happen.
Yes.
What you're probably talking about is surfactant leaching.
Right. Surfactant leaching resembles a tan, brown, or clear spots or little areas. And sometimes it's glossy, soapy, oily, maybe maybe sticky. It could be one of these things. It could be all of these things. Often it happens on newly painted surfaces, usually within a few weeks of applying the new paint. But there's always the off chance that it can happen on older paint. Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen before. Usually it's new paint. Sometimes it can be old.
Right. To explain what causes it, we really need to just talk about the makeup of paint, and we'll keep it light. We won't get into a lot of stuff. But surfactants are ingredients in latex paint, and they're necessary ingredients. They're important ingredients that affect the performance properties of the paint. It affects the color. It affects how well it flows, how well it levels. Surfactants are in the colorants that go into the paint. It's just something that's in there. And normally, over time, they just migrate to the surface and then evaporate. No problems.
Right.
But when drying paint is subjected to moisture or humidity, the surfactants are water-soluble and they're drawn to the surface prematurely. And then you end up with this sticky residue or these splotches on the wall.
Right.
You see it a lot in bathrooms when somebody uses the shower too soon after a paint job.
Right. So now, of course, on the Repcolit Home Improvement Show, we have the fix for this problem because that's what we like to do. We like to help you fix your problems. The good news is if you do have this problem, it's not affecting the integrity of your paint. It just looks really bad and is kind of gross. So the thing you have to do is just wipe it off as soon as you notice it. Use a mild soapy water and a soft sponge or cloth. You don't want to damage the paint, especially if it's new. Rinse it really well. And again, make sure that you're not scratching. Don't use anything, a scouring pad or anything to get it off. Just very gently wipe it. And be aware that it may keep coming back until all of it has come out of the paint. Eventually, it will stop, but you may have to go through this a few times.
The surfactants will take a while to evaporate, so you might see this a couple of times reoccur.
Right.
Usually, like Betsy said, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, you might end up deciding that it's time to repaint, and that's
right.
the solution.
Yep.
If you do go ahead with repainting, there's really nothing extra you need to do other than wash that surfactant leaching off the walls.
Right.
Use the right paint, of course. Mm-hmm. We recommend Benjamin Moore's Aura Bath and Spa. It's resistant to surfactant leaching, but it's important to note that even on all their product data, they recommend and they say very clearly that if you have surfactant leaching on the surface, it has to be cleaned off. Putting Aura Bath and Spa over top of it, even though it's surfactant leaching resistant, if it's already down there, it's still going to be a problem. So clean the surface if you're repainting.
Right. That paint is made for humid areas like pool areas, spas, obviously, and bathrooms. And it's also a mildew-resistant coating, which is an extra added bonus. And it's a matte finish, so you don't have to have those shiny walls with satin or semi-gloss. It's not going to show those imperfections that may be in the wall. It's just going to mask them a little bit. So that's a huge thing with this paint.
Right.
Also, Aura Bath and Spa is washable in 2 weeks, so you don't have to let it sit quite as long. And, well, it's Aura, so that means it covers really well no matter what color. Even if you put navy blue in there, it's going to hold up well and it's going to resist fading if you happen to have a window or some light bulb that tends to fade the paint.
Yeah, it's a great paint for a bathroom.
It
definitely is. It's the one to use.
Absolutely.
Now, if you don't have that particular problem, because not everybody does.
No.
It's common, but not everybody's got that going on right now.
Yep.
So if you don't have the issue, but you are repainting your bathroom and you don't want to have it.
Right.
Because
if you're concerned.
Even though it's common and even though you may not have had it in the past, don't feel left out.
Right.
You know, you don't want to have and deal with this problem.
No, this is not something you want.
If you'd like to avoid it and you're repainting, again, use the right paint. That's the first step.
Yep.
Go to Aura Bath and Spa. We've seen great results with it. If you're starting a bathroom repaint, there is no reason to use anything else. Just go straight to that. Another thing that you can do that's very important, and we referenced it in the beginning, is to just give the paint long enough to dry before you start using showers and stuff like that in the bathroom.
Right. Surfactant leaching occurs when moisture affects a painted surface before it's cured enough. The paint will be dry to the touch, you know, sometimes 15, 20 minutes, half hour,
If it's latex,
an hour.
It can dry really, really fast.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it's cured or reached its full hardness yet.
Exactly. That doesn't happen for about 2 weeks. However, 80% of that hardness is reached in the first 2 days when you put the paint on. So in a bathroom, you don't want to be taking a shower for 2 days.
After 2 days, you can start putting the bathroom back to light use.
Right.
That means shorter showers, cooler showers. Make sure you're running a bathroom fan. Open the door up afterwards as soon as possible to get the moisture out of the room.
After 1 to 2 weeks, you can put that bathroom back to normal use. With Bath and Spa, you're actually fine after 5 to 7 days.
Another benefit of using Bath and Spa, just quicker back to use time.
Right. And remember, don't wash the walls for 2 weeks after you've applied the paint. Now, if you have the surfactant leaching happening, then you can very lightly wipe it down, but don't actually wash it, which means scrubbing.
Right. So if you use Bath and Spa, you won't be dealing with surfactant leaching.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about that anyway.
Right.
The paint world, really, when you think about it, is full of all kinds of crazy stuff. That's what makes this job so interesting. Surfactant leaching is just one of the things that people encounter that completely surprises them
right.
and repulses them.
Yes.
You know, there's so many gross things that you think are happening that really aren't.
Right.
Just know that if you're seeing something really weird, mm-hmm. we've got the answer. We've been
yes.
doing this for years. We've seen pretty much everything. And we'll be able to help you figure out what's going on. Just stop out at any Repco Lighter Port City Paints, and we'll give you some answers.
Now, coming up after the break, if you are in the market for new appliances, don't make any purchases until after the next segment. You are going to thank us. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. I'm Dan Hansen, and I've got to say, I am really excited about this segment. I've looked forward to it all week long because we finally get to talk about appliances on the show.
And I'm Betsy Thompson, and I am looking forward to this as well because I have a kitchen that needs new appliances. And let me tell you, I will be taking copious amounts of notes during this segment.
And I really suggest that everybody out there take notes if you can. You know, if you're driving, don't do the notes thing. Just
no.
listen really well, and then you can go and listen again online at repcolite.com and maybe take some notes that way.
Yes.
It's going to be good stuff.
Yes.
We're joined in the studio by Steve Rosema from Northgate Appliance in Holland, and we're going to talk about the things we need to know before we even walk into the store to start looking for new appliances for our home. Steve, thanks for being here.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Now, all right. Selling appliances, Steve, you've got to run into situations where customers just don't have the right information with them when they come in to make a purchase. Now, we don't want that for our listeners.
No.
We want them as informed as possible because
yes.
we're nice people.
Exactly.
So what would you say are the most important things for our listeners, for buyers to know before we start shopping for appliances?
Yeah, so if we're going to be filling in existing openings, we need to know the dimensions of the appliances that are in there
mm-hmm.
and the dimensions, more importantly, of what the opening is that we're going to be trying to fit them in.
Okay.
And the very, very most important thing to look at is the refrigerator dimensions. And the three refrigerator dimensions we definitely need are the height, the width, and the depth.
Okay.
And people don't always think of that, but the height is going to be the most critical. If you look at refrigerators today, they are not the same size as what they were years ago. And it surprises people to know that most refrigerators are taller than they used to be.
They're taller than they used to be.
They are.
That's a bummer. You can no longer reach the top.
You know, my wife, okay, I can very quickly tell this story. I am not a tall person. Everybody here can see that. Everybody on the radio has heard it.
Yes.
Anyway, my wife, I was asking for a Diet Coke. Is there a Diet Coke in the fridge?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, it's in the fridge. And I said, I don't see it. It's not in the fridge. It's in there. I said, I don't see it. You know, one of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, it's on the top shelf. You probably can't see it. Literally. Now, she meant maybe, I think she meant there was milk or something in front of it. But everybody in the family thought that was hilarious.
Uh-huh.
Dad,
is that
you
short
need me
joke?
To lift you up so you can see the
Do
stuff
you need
on the
a
top
stool?
Shelf. I have a reaching wand to get things out of
yeah.
there. But they're taller now.
They are. So we want you to measure from the floor to the bottom of the cabinet on both sides of the refrigerator to bring that measurement in.
So am I measuring the refrigerator? I'm measuring the space.
The space, correct.
Not
so you go
fridge.
From the floor to the bottom of the cabinet, the wood cabinet that's above there.
And you said on both sides of
on
the cabinet?
On both sides. Occasionally they will be, the cabinets will start to set over the years, or sometimes
oh.
the floor isn't level, and so you'll find that you have a half inch difference. So if you end up measuring the big half, and then we get the refrigerator there, and it doesn't fit because it doesn't fit the small half,
Ooh,
we can be in trouble.
Folks, just bought a refrigerator, and that's exactly what happened. They measured, and they go to put it in,
mm-hmm.
the installation
yeah.
crew, and it sticks, and it's because one side
mm-hmm.
bowed out.
Oh.
They had to do some scraping and sanding to just, it was really close.
Right.
But yeah.
It's always an adventure, isn't it?
It is. So measure both sides, get both the inside sides. Measurement, and get the depth.
Yes, the depth is important as well. So we're looking at the depth from the back wall, obviously, out. Measure what your current one is, but also measure to see how far out you'd be willing to have your new ones.
Okay.
Most of the refrigerators today are deeper than they used to be as well. And so depending on what your width of your opening is, we can actually get different depth refrigerators. They make a cabinet depth refrigerator.
Which is what? What does that mean?
So in the full 36 inches of width is the most popular cabinet depth refrigerator option. So if you have that 36 inches of width, then we can give you either a full depth one, which will be like a 28 cubic foot refrigerator, real big, sticks out,
mm-hmm.
or we could do a cabinet depth one that will be sunk into your cabinets further where only the doors and the gaskets stick out of the cabinet rather than 5 inches of refrigerator cabinet.
Which is plus, what I
have. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Plus the doors, plus the everything else. So
do I lose a lot of square footage?
You lose some. So you're going to lose probably about 15%, 15 to 20% of the square footage.
So, okay.
But it's definitely worth it so that you're not running into it and you have more walking space.
And it
in
just
there.
Doesn't look good.
Well, especially if you have an island, you know, it already gets crunched by the refrigerator. It's really, really popular place to be walking back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can get that sunk into the wall, into the cabinets a little bit further, it gives you just a lot more space to move around the kitchen.
Cool.
I hope everyone is taking notes on this segment of the Repcolite Home Improvement Show because there's a lot of information here that everyone needs to have when they go shopping for appliances. Now, I have a question about doors because I know there's the side-by-sides, there's the top fridge, bottom fridge, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So there's four kinds, right?
Well,
four
there's
main
French
kinds.
Doors.
Yes, the French doors is the popular one
right.
today. That's going to be the two doors on top. That's the refrigerator compartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lower drawer is the freezer.
Yes.
Correct. So that's probably the most popular today.
Okay, so tell me about these things because I had a friend who bought a fridge and put it in, fits perfectly, opened his fridge doors, and he got the
French doors.
French doors, yes, thank you. And it hits the wall because his fridge sits right next to a wall and he mm-hmm. can't open the door all the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, we also recommend definitely when you're coming in with appliances, just take your phone, snap a few pictures of the kitchen that you, with your current appliances in it so we can see it to see once if we're going to run into issues like that. So if you have a French door refrigerator, if you have a side-by-side,
mm-hmm.
those two especially are the problem childs when you are trying to open the doors when it's right next to a wall. And so sometimes you have to get a thinner refrigerator. Even though, say, a 36-inch refrigerator fits the hole physically,
mm-hmm.
you may have to get a 33-inch one just so that door can swing. If it's right up against the wall, sometimes either the door will bind on the wall and you can't open it at all.
That's a problem.
That's a big problem.
You can't get anything
out. Well, that's a great weight loss plan, right? You can't get in there.
But the other problem is if it's close to the wall but not necessarily right up against it,
mm-hmm.
the door or the handle will hit the wall, and it just makes it so that it's hard to get in and out of either the refrigerator or the freezer, depending on which side the wall is on.
Right.
So basically, what I'm hearing is if you haven't taken measurements of the space, if you really haven't, you know, probably snapped some pictures of the layout of the room, shopping for a refrigerator might be almost pointless because you could find something you absolutely love.
But if we don't know if it fits, that's
tough. And you might find out that it doesn't fit.
And some of the modifications you can make to the cabinets if it doesn't fit. So the biggest issue we have is the height, like we had said earlier. So we sell them basically in 30 inches of width, 33 inches of width, and 36 inches of width. If you have a fridge that you want, but it's 68 inches tall and you only have a 66 inch tall cabinet, there are things you can do to make that fit. So you can hire somebody or you can do it yourself. You can trim that upper cabinet or you can actually just raise the cabinet up sometimes.
You could cut a hole in the floor.
Yeah, probably
that
wouldn't recommend
like
cutting a hole in the floor.
Yeah.
But,
all right, let's
you know.
Throw that idea out. It's dumb, Betsy.
Yeah.
So there are things to do that you can make the refrigerator that you really want to fit.
Excellent. Now, we had hoped to get through an entire kitchen worth of appliances, and right now we basically just got the refrigerator covered.
Yep.
So, Steve, do you have time to hang with us over the break?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll be back with Steve after the break. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost. On News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
And we're back. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. And we were talking about appliances, and we only got to refrigerators during the last segment.
Somebody kept interrupting with questions and stories.
Right. So we asked Steve to come back for another segment. So Steve from Northgate Appliance is back in the studio with us to hopefully talk about the rest of the kitchen and
right.
round it out a little bit. So let's talk about dishwashers, because I know that Dan would like to put one in. I have one that needs to be replaced. What do we need to be considering to purchase a new dishwasher?
Sure. Well, one of the things you want to start with is, again, measuring your opening. So what you do is you measure from the floor to mm-hmm. the bottom of the countertop.
Okay.
And we want to have at least 34 inches. That's kind of our target measurement.
Mm-hmm.
If you have less, Don't be afraid. You could still get one to fit.
Okay.
But if 34 is really that target height.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people have replaced floors over the years, and
right.
they don't always rip out their old floors or take their dishwashers out when they replace flooring. So one of the biggest things we run into with dishwasher installs is we get the new dishwasher there. They thought they had enough height, but they didn't measure. And because they put a new wood floor down
right.
or a new laminate mm-hmm. floor or something like that, now all of a sudden we don't have enough height for the new dishwasher to fit. And so let's take those measurements in. If you have that 34-inch target height,
mm-hmm.
that's the first key. After that, then we're just looking at what types of options and styles and features you'd like. So dishwashers will come today with what they call recessed handles or pocket handles
mm-hmm.
with the controls on the outside or are the controls on the top that are integrated.
Yep.
They have ones with the handles on the outside. They have lots of different options as far as styling goes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also want to think about the features that you may be wanting. Is the dishwasher you want something that has to be very quiet?
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are much quieter than they were even 6 or 8 years ago.
Do you have one? What if I want one excessively loud? Do you have one like that?
Well, we could probably take the one out of Betsy's house and put it in your
yes!
house.
Yes, it is very loud. It sounds like a rocket ship taking off.
At least I won't hear the children arguing. So
exactly.
You want to pay attention to that part of it, the noise,
right? So,
what other things might you consider?
So, the other things you could consider. Some of the brands have leak protection. So they will actually have a solid pan underneath it, and it'll catch any drips or leaks that may come out of the dishwasher before it goes onto your floor.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually sensors in that pan so that it'll alert you to the fact that there's an issue. It'll shut the dishwasher down and drain it out.
Oh.
And so Bosch is the one brand that really pushes that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really important thing to have, especially, okay, now you just did a remodel or something and you put in this
just
really
in
expensive
nice floor.
This is something that can help protect it. Or
right.
it also protects the finished ceiling in the basement if you have a finished mm-hmm. ceiling underneath there.
Now, you said Bosch is the company that
Bosch is who has the solid pan floor.
Other ones
okay.
don't.
No. So if you do anything from the Whirlpool brand, most of the Electrolux branded ones aren't going to have that option.
Okay. So
okay.
those are things to consider.
Yeah.
I have a quick question about the drawers, because there's the ones that are just everything's all in one big opening, but then somebody was telling me about these drawer ones where it has two drawers. I've looked at one, and it seemed like you would lose space. Do you actually lose space with those?
You
or
do
is it
lose
the same?
A little space. So
okay.
your looks, they aren't deceiving. It doesn't have quite as much space.
Okay.
But the convenience of having two separate dishwashers that can run independently
mm-hmm.
a lot of times will be more important to people, especially if you're an empty nester, or if you're just a couple, or if you're single. You know, you're not running the dishwasher, a full dishwasher, every day. It's nice to be able to have these options
okay.
for half sizes. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, the dish drawer is definitely an option. And we sell those. You can get those in all kinds of different colors, different styles too. So nice options there.
If you're just joining us, we're in the studio with Steve from Northgate Appliance, and he was with us the last segment talking about refrigerators, and now we're moving on to the rest of the appliances on the RepColite Home Improvement Show. Now, I want to talk about ranges because, again, I need a new range, and I've been looking at them, and I know there are a lot of new things to be considering when it comes to these. It's not just gas or electric anymore.
Yeah, so now they have options where you can get ovens that have convection cooking in them,
mm-hmm.
Or just a standard conventional bake. And so a lot of brands will have it either way. So you
okay.
got to decide, hey, you know, do I want to be able to do multiple items at once? Do I want to have really, really good roasts? Because those are the things that the convection ovens really shine.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want no gas or electric, obviously,
yep.
you know, but then the convection oven. And then you also have a couple of different designs or a couple of different ways that the ranges are made, where you could do either the traditional freestanding stove with the mm-hmm. controls in the back,
yep.
or you could do a slide-in that have the controls up on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on the look of your kitchen, where the stove is located, it will definitely make a difference as to which range you could put in there.
All right. So we spent tons of time on the other things, talking about the measurements and how important that mm-hmm. is. I mean, is this as varied as the refrigerators?
Not nearly as much. No.
Okay.
So basically, the ranges are all going to be 30 inches of width. They will, if you measure your counter and say, oh, I have 29 and 15 16ths, that's okay. They're all just a shade less than that 30 inches.
So I'm paying for 30 inches.
But you're getting less.
So the same is true of the microwave, though, right? So the microwave goes in a 30-inch cabinet up there. But they're all just a shade less than that 30 inches as well. So when it comes to the range and the microwave, if you're hanging the microwave over the range,
mm-hmm.
Those are pretty standard openings.
Okay.
But one thing we really want you to make sure you have when you're looking at microwaves is measuring from the top of your cooking surface to the bottom of the cabinet that the microwave is going to hang from.
Okay.
Because they're bigger, we want to make sure that we have 32 inches minimum between the cooking surface and the bottom portion of that cabinet. If you have less than that, what can happen is you're cooking with a big pot or something like that, mm-hmm. and it'll actually melt the microwave door. And we've had that before. We've actually had to take out microwaves and put in hoods instead of microwaves because of them not having enough clearance.
Oh, really?
And so we want to look at that as well.
I never would have thought of doing that, ever.
So with the microwaves, standard widths.
Standard width, 30 inches of width, if we're talking about ones that hang over the range.
Mm-hmm. But the big thing is that we're looking for 32 inches minimum from the cooking surface to the bottom of the cabinet that the microwave hangs from. And if you don't have enough space there,
you either got to put it somewhere else. You can modify that cabinet if you want to. You could have somebody come out and modify the cabinet mm-hmm. so that you can raise that up. Or you could put a hood in.
All right. So the big thing that you get out of all of this is measure, measure, measure.
Yes.
Bring in the measurements. Call the store ahead of time, Northgate Appliance. They'll tell you what you need to measure if you missed some of that here.
Mm-hmm.
Come in with pictures. More information is going to be better than
less.
That's right.
You certainly not err by bringing in too much stuff.
Right.
Now, Steve, you guys sell appliances. You also service?
We do. Yeah, we service everything that we sell. So if you ever have any trouble from any appliance that came from Northgate, we can come out and take a peek at it for you.
All right. Excellent. So if our listeners want to get in touch with you or anybody at Northgate Appliance, how do they best
Absolutely.
Do that?
The phone number is probably the best way to reach us. So 616-396-4456. If somebody wants to get a hold of me directly, my email, steve@northgateappliance.com.
And then the website would be, of course, northgateappliance.com.
That's it.
All right. So check it out. Steve Rosema from Northgate Appliance. Thanks for hanging with us through two segments.
I appreciate it. It was fun.
When we come back, we're going to help take some of the mystery out of choosing colors for your home. And we're also going to talk about our next contest. Don't wander off.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore.
And we're back, and I'm going to be appliance shopping in the near future.
As am I.
Yeah. Now I know what to do, though. I'm going to get the right measurements.
Measure everything first.
Get the right measurements, because I don't want to go. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. I always go, and I find a refrigerator, because that's mm-hmm. what I always need, that I love. And then I get home, and I realize it is never going to fit in that space. And now I'm frustrated.
Yes.
So I'm going to get the measurements first.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even look at the really nice refrigerators.
Right.
I'll go straight to the basics. Okay, this one will fit. So at least I'm not going to get all excited about the one that has all the, you know, the built-in TV and stuff.
Exactly.
Exactly. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Now, we get a lot of questions at Repco Light, and none of them are appliance questions. They're always...
Unless it's, can I paint my appliances?
Yes, we do
and
get
the
that.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
With stipulations.
Exactly.
We'll cover that another time.
Yes. So, yes, we get all kinds of paint questions, project questions, and so very often we get color questions because it's confusing to people. So many people have had bad experiences when they choose color.
Because so much is riding on it.
Right.
You choose the wrong colors and you go through all the work of painting. No matter how easy we, you know, can make painting sound, there's still work involved. And if the colors are bad, there's a lot of blame to go around.
I've been in those situations.
And it's very depressing.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people run into is we have this vision. And what we're trying to create is color flow.
Yes.
We may not call it that. We may not know exactly what we're you know, what we're getting at. But what mm-hmm. we want is a home that feels cohesive, well put together.
Right.
But the problem is a lot of us don't have the opportunity to decorate from a blank canvas. We don't start with an empty shell
right.
and just get to do whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
We've got what we've got, and we've got the time to do the living room.
Right.
Or maybe a bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a few months or a year, we'll get the next room, and we'll work our way through that way. And the tendency is to create all these little spaces
mm-hmm.
that are nice with, you know, in and of themselves.
They're independent spaces.
Independent spaces that are great.
Yep.
But when you start to look at them as a whole or the home as a whole,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't feel connected. It feels disjointed, scattered, like a patchwork.
Right. And the common thing that people do to solve this problem is just to paint every single wall in the entire home exactly the same color.
Well, right. That is the basic solution to creating color flow. How am I going to do it? I'm going to find a neutral, paint every single wall that color, and
yep.
I'll accent with, you know, different colors and create interest that way.
Right.
And that does work. You know,
it
there
does.
Is that. But we went through the Parade of Homes
mm-hmm.
a couple of months ago,
yep.
a number of months ago. And one of the things that I came away with that really,
mm-hmm.
really stuck with me was the very first home that we went through used color in a great way.
Yes.
And we were very excited.
Yes,
the next home had a very popular gray color on
mm-hmm.
the walls, and it was on all the walls, exactly what we're just talking about.
Right.
All the walls, some different accent colors.
Mm-hmm.
It was all right. It was
yeah.
nice. Went to the next home, same gray color, all mm-hmm. the walls. By the third home, third in a
yes.
row that we went through that had that, I didn't even care
uh-huh.
about the brand new home. I didn't care about the brand new appliances. None of it even looked interesting to me.
Nope.
And it wasn't something that I was aware of at the time or conscious of why. I just knew I was bored.
They all looked the same.
It hit me later. It's because they all looked the same. They'd used that same
yep.
color throughout and hadn't created anything interesting in the spaces. The accent colors alone couldn't pull it out or make it interesting.
Right.
So you can do that, put that same color on everything, but you're really running the risk of being pretty boring. There's a
yes.
better solution. You can create color flow simply by finding a primary color and using that throughout the home. But it's important to understand, because it sounds like I just said, do what I just said, don't do.
Right.
The important point is to understand that primary color that you find that works its way through the whole
mm-hmm.
home doesn't need to be the primary color of every single room. It
right.
just needs to show up in
right.
small areas. Sometimes it'll be the whole room. Sometimes it'll be just little accessories.
Right. That's the nice thing to remember is that you can paint the walls that color, but then you can move it into the next room with accessories. It could even be something like a stain that you choose. Perhaps it's the banister in the stairs that then moves into the furniture in your living room that then goes into your island in the kitchen. It just has to be in every space. That's what creates the continuity that you're looking
That's
for.
That's what makes the whole home feel like it's well put together,
right.
that it was thought out. And all of that. And the other thing to remember is that you don't have to use the same exact shade throughout, because
right.
that is another pitfall that people fall into
mm-hmm.
is, okay, my primary color is this grayish blue, let's say.
Right.
Because the first parade house that we went through, that one that we really liked,
mm-hmm.
used a grayish blue as the primary color.
Right.
But they didn't use that same exact gray blue
mm-hmm.
in every single room. They had the grayish blue on the walls in this one room.
Yep.
Then we get to another room and they've got accessories that had a cobalt blue. They simply pulled from the color family, you know,
yes.
the blue color family, and they brought different shades, different tones of blue into the decorating. And the cool thing about that is that it creates depth, it
right.
creates visual interest, and you really look like you know what you're doing.
Absolutely, you do. Now, the place to start with all of this, because people quite often don't know where to start. If you have a really cool piece of artwork, or you have a comforter that you really love the color in, maybe even the curtains in one of your rooms,
throw
start
pillows.
There. Yeah, start there. Pull colors that you love out of those things. And I'm sure that there are people who are saying, well, but I don't have any of those things. So start at the color rack and pull colors that you love. And quite often women look at me and say, well, I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, what are your favorite colors? And quite often, if they really think about it, they are wearing the color that they really love, or a combination
mm-hmm.
of colors that they really love. That's a great place to start. Look for inspiration everywhere. And if you've listened to previous episodes, maybe you even have a color folder started, which we highly recommend, and the hard work is done for you. Just start going through the color folder and pulling the things that you really, really love out of there.
Right. We've got a link on our Facebook page that will tell you what a color folder is. Go check that out. That is definitely something worth doing.
Right. We're talking about color flow in the Repco Light Home Improvement Show today. And we've talked about now how to find your color palette. Now comes the tricky part. This is finding your primary color. And really, it's not as bad as you would
think.
Yeah, don't
freak everybody out. Well, it's not bad.
It's not as bad as you would think. This is where people get a little bit hung up.
This is where they think it's freaky.
Right. So I just want to use an example throughout this because I think it'll help people visualize it better. I know you love the painting The Scream. So it has blues and it has tans and it has this bright orangey red sky.
I like orange.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. You love this orange color, but can you really live with it everywhere?
As my primary color?
Right. Do you really want it all over? Do you want walls, lots
my
of walls painted
that
color?
Would vote that down. I would even have to vote that down.
Right. So maybe you go with the darker linen color of the face in that painting. It's something you can live with, something the family can live with. And then you just bring in the orange as an accent color here and there. I'm not saying that you can't put that orange, you know, on a wall or a couple walls in a room, but maybe don't use it as the primary color. Use that dark linen and then sprinklings of this orange. Just make sure you carry that linen color throughout every single room. It just has to be there somewhere.
Right. The primary color, it's just got to be something that you can live with.
Right.
You want it to be a color you really like, but it doesn't have to be your favorite one in the palette. It's just got to be one that you like the best that you can also live with.
Yes.
It's a nice little compromise.
Yes.
Then you get that through, and then the rest of the supporting colors come pretty readily. It's just a matter of what other color chips did you pull, what other colors were in there that you liked, and you just use variations on those scattered throughout the rest of the home. Sometimes that'll be the main wall in certain rooms. Sometimes it's just going to be little accent pieces again.
Right. The thing to remember is you can get these different tones and variations in color just in the simple materials that things are made of. I've seen lots of different items. Apparently, lately, the thing is aqua. So there's glass aqua, and then there's ceramic aquas, and there's metal aquas. And depending on the material, the aqua is varying shades. And that's a great way to bring in color. And it doesn't matter that it doesn't match exactly. If you bring in aqua pillows, they're going to be a little bit different than what you've already got. You don't have to match.
And like we said earlier, you don't want to match.
Right. It's more fun the other way.
Very boring. Matchy-matchy is code word for boring.
Boring.
So you don't want to do that. Use these different tones. It creates interest.
Right.
One other thing that you can do that will really help tie everything together is keep the same color on all your trim.
Right. Now, if you're still a little concerned or not quite confident in pulling colors in this way, we have something very cool. I love to show this to people.
It's the magic trick we talked about earlier.
Yeah, it is absolutely a magic trick. People are always amazed. It's a fan deck by Benjamin Moore. It's their Affinity fan deck. 144 colors in this thing. And you can pick any of the colors, any three, four, five colors, and they will all coordinate together. That's a great way to create color flow. I turn it over to people all the time.
Yeah,
so
put it upside down.
Upside
they can't
down.
See the colors.
Right. Okay.
Pick three.
Right. It's like a card game. Pick three. You flip it over. Now, granted, it might not be the colors that they like, but they will.
But it still looks like a designer put it together.
It does.
And that's because a designer did.
Right. Now, if you'd like to win one of your own, we're giving away an Affinity fan deck and a $25 gift certificate to Repco Light or Port City Paints to five lucky winners. Just go to our Facebook page, like the page, and then share the post about this new contest. If you want an extra entry, tell us in the comments what your next project is.
And speaking about contests, we do have the list of winners of our Corona Brush giveaway from last week posted on the Facebook page right now. So go there and check that out. We'll be contacting you shortly. And that's pretty much going to do it, Betsy, for another episode of the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. If you missed anything today or you want to check out past episodes, everything's online at repcolight.com.
Make sure you check it out. And whatever project you've got planned for today, no matter what you're working on or where you're working, there's a Repco Light or Port City Paints right nearby.
We're open till 3 o'clock this afternoon. Stop out and see us. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And help you make sure that the doors on your new fridge open smoothly every single time you go for snacks.
Thank goodness.
Exactly. Thanks for listening.